Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Gokumpa.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
Fireworks. Don't muck about.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey tennis?
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey tennis?
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick. With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey tennis?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, 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 absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey tennis?
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn. Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.
Nah.
Monkey tennis?
From the host house.
Keep it down, love.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined, as ever, by Tom Dark.
I've not become gay, I've just become a busty woman.
Nick Alder.
'Twas 5 a.m, and all through the host house, nothing was stirring, not even a ghost mouse.
And Tom Stab.
Just another lorry driver popping to the toilets for a wank.
I'd forgotten about that line. So yes, welcome to Monkey Tennis. We're continuing our journey through Alan's own podcast, From the Oast House, which obviously you can get on Audible. We're up to episodes 14 and 15 today, subtitled Dreams and Hair. Dreams opens with Alan's wonderful Oast House ghost mouse rhyme that you just heard from Nick.
Well, he says that it's the one phrase that rhymes with Oast House. Well, ghost mouse isn't a phrase.
Not a phrase.
No. And he goes on to name three more, namely roast grouse, toast nouse, and boast spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, none of those. Well, I suppose maybe you could argue roast grouse is not a phrase, but it is a thing. None of the others
roast
are really
is a thing. A yes. Thing.
Well, yeah. They're all words that rhyme, I think is where we get to.
Yeah, so it's 4:50 a.m.
He's up with a partridge again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Did we all have that in our notes? 4:50 a.m. Yes. You're up with a partridge, yeah.
Alan's in his kitchen. He's up early because he says he's had a dream that's left him discombobulated, excited, shaken, elated, panicky, satisfied, and hot.
that is a real insight into the mind of Alan Partridge, isn't it? An absolute confused emotional mess.
So I'm coming.
Can you go through that list again, Tom? Quickly?
Yeah. So it is discombobulated, excited, shaken, elated, panicky, satisfied, and hot.
So that's brilliant. So it's like it's a real like mixed bag of positive and negative feelings going on there. It doesn't make any sense at all.
I also like that he never says aroused, but the combination of a lot of those words together basically add up to aroused, don't they? Satisfied and hot.
So I'm coming in with an early question to the group. Can you think of a dream that has left you feeling discombobulated, excited, shaken, elated, panicky, satisfied, or hot?
Probably not all in one dream. Maybe across an entire night's worth of dreams, you might hit on all of those.
This is slightly unrelated, but I do have recurring dreams. Does anyone have this? I often have dreams where I'm trying to run and I can't run, and I'm just sort of stuck, and it's quite frustrating. That's quite a recurring...
I've definitely had dreams like that. I've definitely had all like the classic, I've had a falling dream before, I've had a teeth falling out dream before, I've had the one that you kind of just described there, Nick, yeah.
The shoot yourself dream, had that one? Not a dream, not a dream, pal. That's reality.
I think, there's definitely a recurring dream I've been having, and it's more of a nightmare, I'd say, kind of probably over like the last 4 or 5 years, like probably have it like once every like 4 or 6 months or something.
But I see where this is going.
I'm trapped in a room for like a whole weekend with 3 other people, and we have to just talk about Alan Partridge for about 10 hours at a time. That's this podcast.
And mysteriously, you've adopted Will from the Inbetweeners voice in this dream.
Exactly.
Yep.
The only dream that I can think of that I've always remembered this dream. I must have been like 7 or 8, and I've always remembered this dream where the entire cast of EastEnders were vampires.
That sounds quite good.
And there was like a dramatic moment where like the camera like shifted to Dot Cotton, and then she was looking into the camera, and her like teeth came down. I remember that so vividly, and I've got no idea why. It's always.
I reckon we could get
a
producer Jed to get that commission.
Yeah, absolutely.
Keen to see Barry from EastEnders as a vampire.
Yes,
yeah. Ian Beale as a vampire.
Ian Beale as Vlad the Impaler.
Well, we're about, 4 minutes in, and we're off on a super tangent already. This is incredible.
Let's bring it back. So I do love the detail that Alan sleeps in a long, baggy Wham! T-shirt on top of a...
Two?
No. Well, he sleeps in a long-sleeved, baggy Wham! T-shirt, and on top of that is a baggy, short-sleeved Wham! T-shirt. Yep. Mm-hmm. Leggings.
And leggings.
And, crucially, sheepskin slipper boots. Now.
Oh. Yeah. We all know where this is going.
Right, so... Question to the group, do any of you wear sheepskin slipper boots? Perhaps some kind of booty?
No. Why would I wear something as disgusting and awful as that?
Well, Nick?
We've
covered this already, but we're still we're doing the gag anyway.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I think our regular listeners will know, and I'm just sporting it for the camera now.
Here we go. I can smell it from here, and we're about 300 miles apart.
The absolute pong on that.
I basically will most days wear a booty slipper that is sheepskin lined for comfort and style
and
crucially warmth and stench.
But Nick, isn't the key thing here that you wear them barefoot so they after about a week they stink?
Yeah, but just pop them in the washer for 6 months.
Right.
Well, hey, you've got clean booties.
I mean, Stab, you say we've covered this before, but you know, when people do an intervention and it doesn't work, they don't just give up, do they? So here we are again.
Nick, can you just hold that up to the camera again, please? Right, so we're recording this, so we're going to put this little clip out on socials, and then we're going to put a poll and just say, are these acceptable slipper wear for a grown man to wear?
Yeah.
Nick
and
Alan.
Which cheese do you think the smell is equivalent to? Just jumping back to Alan's nighttime outfit.
We probably should jump back to Alan, shouldn't we, really?
He says his leggings are from Etam. Now, I might be wrong here, but I thought Etam was an exclusively female clothing outfit.
Yeah, it is.
Outfit, right?
Oh, is that the joke?
I also wonder if perhaps this is what comes back later when he has his kind of quite kind of convoluted dream. If you notice, he's basically wearing a Wham! T-shirt and women's leggings.
There's
an argument that perhaps that has played on his mind when he goes to sleep, and that's how the dream happened. In much the same way as I was scrolling through the Amazon Prime menu and then watched the news yesterday and then had a dream where the cast and crew of X-Files were rejecting my episode ideas because they thought I had coronavirus. So, similar thing.
Stop dreaming about Gillian Anderson. You're never going to meet her, Adam.
I was just going to say that I think we've learned before, but it's reiterated at this point that Rosa has signed an NDA, which I like to remind myself of. I think that's important.
Yeah, that's good.
It is good. And also, the NDA has been signed so that, you know, she won't talk about his look, but he has very much proudly talked about that on a podcast. So
the NDA
very much superfluous.
You've got to wonder as well, where has he got those Etam leggings from as well? Like, that seems like an odd clothing item that he should have, because I think Adam's right. I think it is a female clothing store.
Is it something perhaps that Sonia's left behind?
Or Rosa? Maybe Rosa. Some of Rosa's spares.
Or Carol?
Is Etam even still going? When did anyone last see an Etam store?
I don't know. Has it gone the way of CNA?
I did check on Google. It does still exist, but it actually seems to list itself as a lingerie store these days, which was an interesting development. Mm. So maybe Alan's been doing some kinky shopping, I don't know.
I'm just looking at the website now. I mean, we're going way too far into Etam now, but I feel like...
They've got some snazzy pyjama bottoms, actually. Nice flower prints.
They do, really nice. It's quite a lot of lingerie.
So, Alan, he takes it upon himself to scribble down some key words while he's doing it sort of like in a lucid sort of sleep state. And has anyone got the four words that he notes down?
I've got some of them. He starts with supersonic, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, then it's trapeze.
Yep, and then...
Edmonds, of course.
Sounds like a bit of a show idea. Like the genesis of a show idea. Supersonic trapeze, Edmonds.
It doesn't come as a huge surprise that he's still dreaming about Edmonds, to be totally honest. I can imagine that Edmonds plays on his mind an awful lot in terms of the success that he's had and just, you know, generally being... one of his arch rivals, although we do find out a little bit more about some of his enemies a little bit later on in the episode, but I can imagine Edmonds is still someone that very much kind of haunts his dreams and thoughts on a daily basis.
I feel like he's the core enemy, isn't he, Edmonds?
He's now
enemy numero one.
Yeah. And then Alan says that he's now going to record his thoughts as they occur, to which I thought, well, this is probably going to be one of those waffly, slightly nothing episodes, but I mean, it's packed with detail, but crucially none of that detail is really it's called dream related, so it's basically just half an hour of whimsy.
I think the bits I enjoyed most in this episode weren't Alan's dream retelling, it's everything else around it. So particularly, I'm sure we'll get to this in a bit more detail, but stuff around eggs and stuff like that in this episode, those are my highlights personally.
I really like this episode, just to put it out there, it's good.
Yeah, I liked it. I was shocked by the statistic that Alan gets a positive reaction from claiming that 7 out of 10 women enjoy him just giving them a bunch of flowers because he happens to think that they're a pretty woman in the street.
Yeah.
I would call that statistic into question.
Is he fudging the numbers there?
He's absolutely fudging the numbers. I feel like this is like when you see an advert for like a cosmetics brand and they're like 88% of women agree. It's like, yeah, but how many times did you run that survey to get that result? I think when he says 7 times out of 10, it's welcome. I think his threshold for welcome is they take the flowers from him
and then he
walks away. Like they accept the flowers into their arms. That counts as it being welcome.
Basically, if they haven't been rejected or if he hasn't been like punched in the face, it's being chalked down as positive.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure if anyone walked down the street and just handed a bunch of flowers to a passerby before they knew what they were doing, that passerby would have accepted the flowers. So yeah, it's a low bar to cross. He also falls asleep during the description of his dream, which I enjoyed. And there's a bit where he repeats his sort of ghost mouse joke poem, and then gets very embarrassed about having repeated it, and says, sorry, that's not what you're paying your money for, which I thought was quite apt given that we've noticed several jokes in Oast House, in iPartridge, and in Nomad that are repeated elsewhere in the APU.
Very good. So as we know from Scissored Isle, seldom only eats boiled eggs. In this case, an average meal for Seldom appears to be 16 boiled eggs with loads of salt. That is going to be so bad for him.
But remember, this is a diet that is forced upon him by Alan as a means to control his bloodlust. I can't believe this is the diet that Seldom would actually choose to have.
So it seems like he was on a boiled egg-only diet in Scissored Isle. Then there was a brief period at the beginning of the Oast House episodes where they were experimenting with things like Spam and putting meat on Rivita. But that's basically driven him mad. And so they've had to go back to this egg diet to try and calm him. I like that it's it's described as Seldom demands a pan of eggs as well.
I love that that bit as well finishes with an egg heavy diet comes at a price. Yeah, because we also know that eggs is or some kind of egg based dish is Alan's favourite food. So still not quite clear on whether this is really of Seldom's choosing, but I really did enjoy the way that this whole gag plays out. You hear him counting up to, I think, is it? Well, 14. Basically counting gets, up to 12. 14 or 12, yeah. It's very good.
Yeah, you're quite right that eggs are a bit of a kind of, you know, culinary narrative through line, because in the episode where he talks about his grandchildren, at the end of that kind of monologue in that video recorded speech to him, he does say, like, you know, my favourite meal is eggs. I mean, one, that's madness anyway. But yeah, odd that Alan has such an affectionate relationship with eggs.
Just before we get into Alan's dream, Alan talks a little bit about witches and cleaners and refers to them both as the broom women, which I quite liked.
Yeah. So he's trying to talk about the witching hour, isn't he? So it's 4:55 a.m. at this point, saying it's a magical time of day, which is why witches get up earlier. Is it witches or cleaners? Dunno, it's one of the broom women. I think that's one of the best lines in this episode.
Yeah, really underrated line, I think, because it kind of like, it's not really part of any like wider point or anything like that, or wider section or scene or anything like that. It's just a throwaway line, but I just thought it was excellent.
Yeah.
Great writing.
Is it at this point that we need to talk about Alan's quite detailed dream?
Well, it starts off normally enough. He's in Pakistan.
I love that part. Yeah, captured by Islamist militants. Starts normally enough.
Has anyone got the details on the dream?
Some of them, yeah. Yeah, feel free to fill this in with any extra colour. So the Islamist militants are about to torture him, but it turns out the interrogator is Noel Edmonds.
Brilliant.
Who then asks, do you want to test drive the new Range Rover with me? Before you know it, they're at a pub lunch in the Chilterns. Peter Gabriel's there. Noel comes on to Alan, and Alan is now a woman. He drives home in floods of tears. He starts to build a life for himself. His friends rally round, with a few exceptions. Seldom doesn't get it, though. He's prejudiced against Alan. He believes he's been no-platformed and cuckolded by Seldom.
I love that he says Seldom is spun out by it. Yeah. I really like that turn of phrase.
I love as well the way that they're sort of throwing in things like no-platformed, cuckolded, negging and stuff like that into these episodes.
From a dog, from a dog. That's a bit. It's from his dog.
No-platformed by a dog. And so he changed his name to Alana. Friends offer to take him shopping, but he says, I'm not gay, as if shopping's exclusively a homosexual activity. But then they offer to take him to M&S and Karen Millen, and that's exactly what he wants. He starts trying on a dress, he's singing Chaka Khan, and then I think he wakes up around this point feeling immense relief.
I think the final bit is, isn't he enjoying the way that the new dress is clinging to his or her curves, but then an observation about being ever so hairy.
Yes, and also it's a dream so vivid that he feels he has to thank some of the people for the role they played in the dream, thanking his female friends for lifting him up in the dream, and also thanks Luigi, who he doesn't refer to in any detail, but just says, you know how to make a woman feel special. I think we know what that means.
Yeah, so, I think you've covered that well. Yeah.
So obviously there's quite a lot going on here and a lot to digest. So I found a website called thecuriousdreamer.com to see if I could take any elements of the dream and what they mean in terms of an interpretation. So I'll just run through them now. These are sort of the key elements of the dream and what they sort of mean in sort of this sphere of dream interpretation. So we've got dancing, which is self-expression, creativity, or communication, or the need for it. Friendship. A friendship can represent real, imagined, or desired friendships in real life. Hair. Something wrong with a person's hair, weird colour, missing, too much, in the wrong places, may reflect a problem or situation you feel that person is having in real life. For example, being covered in hair could mean you're feeling overwhelmed or out of balance in your life. Mm. Alan's singing. So that can represent self-expression again, the essence of your soul, having a voice in the world, creativity, communication, freedom, or inhibition. Hostage. Fear of physical, mental, or emotional attack, or being the victim of it. Crying, self-expression again. Gender. Now, to dream your gender implies you are having trouble determining your role in society. You may be lately feeling overly self-conscious about how you're perceived by others. If you're male and dream of seeing yourself as a female, it indicates the need for nurturing. So there we go. That's kind of the overarching interpretation of the elements of Alan's dream, which I think are kind of quite recognisable Alan tropes.
I wonder how much of this Alan gets to talk about with the counsellor.
The man that he pays to talk to sometimes.
That's it. I was thinking, what's the sort of term that he used, but that's it, yeah. I wonder if any of these themes are kind of discussed in their weekly chat. I could imagine that would obviously be, you know, a perfectly good area for them to discuss, but I could almost imagine Alan going to that weekly session kind of going, oh, I don't know whether to get automatic or manual transmission on my next car. It's just keeping me up at night. Like, kind of delving into like practical problems rather than the complicated minefield that is Alan's mind.
Alan does then go on to sort of look into whether his dreams can be interpreted after an ad break, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. So he gets a reply from a professor of neuropsychology and author of The Way We Dream, who just says, no, it can't be interpreted.
Yeah, Dominic St. John, assistant professor of neuropsychology at Brunel University, a specialist in onerology, the science of dreams, and the author of The Way We Dream, and he says, no. Which is quite
very much like There Is Nothing, isn't
it? Yeah, it's very much the afterlife gag from I'm Alan Partridge. You see where it's going, but it's still funny.
And it feels a bit like it's like Alan was setting this episode up to be the first half would be describing his dream, the second half would be interpreting it. Yes. But now an expert's waded in and basically scuppered that whole plan.
and I feel like that's the whole thing throughout this episode. I feel like Alan really wants people to agree that dreams tell you things, that they basically predict the future and all that sort of stuff. But on the whole, mostly the feedback he's getting is no, they don't.
Yeah. Although thankfully he does find some balance in that he hears from a Brighton trinket seller who says they do because she dreamt her teeth fell out and weeks later one did. So that's opinions, Alan says, on both sides of the debate, which I thought was a really nice nod to. There's been lots of sort of accusations of like the BBC and things like that of kind of trying to give balance to arguments that don't really deserve equal balance.
I did wonder if that was kind of what they were targeting with that a little bit, because that is quite a... That line is quite pointed, isn't it? Fascinating opinions on both sides of the debate.
Can we talk quickly about Alan's Excalibur Blinds advert?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Basically, it's scaremongering at old people, isn't it? Has anyone got the details? Yeah.
Keep the outside outside. That's the opening gambit, isn't it?
Yeah. They say if an intruder does get inside, they can really go to town. Police cuts mean response times are longer than ever.
Also, a line I highlighted, there are more disturbed people around than ever before.
Great.
I really enjoyed the pronunciation as well on the kind of the sign off for this. So it's like Excalibur roller shutters. Don't worry.
Even though you've had a whole minute long advert of full of scaremongering.
Don't worry.
And also halfway through, there's some weird pronunciation where he's like, they could harm you and your family physically. Like that.
Really good. He's done that before with like the experimental gravy from the chips ad, isn't it? Just that kind of the way that he kind of enunciates it. Brilliant.
And then we have a tweet from High Noon, but crucially, Alan won't read it out.
Well, this is the kind of like joke that, again, we've seen before, where you're hearing him read and react and kind of in parts enjoying the joke. So it's like that. It's quite good. Yeah. Oh, no.
I'm not reading that out.
But you don't know what it is, but just that kind of like the live reaction to him kind of reading it, processing it. A gag they've done before, but it just works. So why not keep doing it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it's great. And I think it also starts an interesting development of... There's an interesting kind of the beginnings of a dynamic shift in his relationship with High Noon here, because he's enjoying the tweet, he's acknowledging that it's funny, and he actually Alan says credit to him for responding at 5:30 in the morning. He despises round the clock. So there's a weird kind of softening we're beginning to see as we get into these final few episodes, which I thought was quite interesting.
So is it time to talk about the Partridge Playhouse casting call?
Yes, please.
So a new winged pear tree, we assume.
So many wings, so many kids, so many shell companies and offshoots of one business. But they are holding auditions for As Time Goes By. So I'm not sure if any of you remember As Time Goes By. I sort of vaguely remember it, but I don't feel like it's massively stood the test of time in terms of like, you know, repeats. For me, the one key thing to pull out here is that Alan is essentially casting for a woman to play a 59-year-old. But crucially, that woman must be between the ages of 30 and 39 years old. And for some reason, hold a clean driving license, which I assume bears nothing, in relation to the part. It's just that Alan respects people that have clean driving licenses versus those that don't.
I like the bit where Alan describes it as an 80s sitcom. I checked. It was broadcast between 1992 and 2006.
Well, God, it's that recent. I also thought perhaps the reason behind the clean driving license is either that he just thinks that should be a prerequisite for anything that anyone does because driving's so important to him.
Probably.
Or it's that reading between the lines, he's looking for someone who basically to play his lover. He's obviously hoping sparks will fly off stage as well as on. And so what's his natural in making sure that they at least understand the basics of driving, because that's his sort of go-to conversation piece.
Nice.
The other bit with this casting call is it says pop along for open audition. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Maybe there'll be a follow-up in a few episodes' time.
I'm sure it'll go great.
In a similar vein, Twitter activity is quite thin at this point in the episode. He's so desperate for people to weigh in at 6 a.m. or whatever it is about dreams that he finds a loiterer and invites them in, desperate for content, although does insist they take their shoes off.
It's Paul. Brilliant, this bit as well. It's Paul, isn't it? He's like, what do you know about dreams? Oh, not that much, really.
I thought Paul was actually quite astute on dreams. He actually had quite a lot to say for a man who's just there to deliver butter and eggs. But Alan basically had nothing to add, and so just kicks him out straight away.
Well, I think this is you know, something we've seen before, where it's evident that at first it appears that Paul doesn't have anything to add, and then actually has quite an astute observation about dreams, at which point Alan probably panics that clearly this person is more informed than he is, therefore it's time that he's shown the door.
Well, for me, my take on this was, I think more than anything, Alan's annoyed because he isn't giving him the interpretation that he wants. He wants somebody, like I was saying earlier, he wants somebody to agree that dreams predict the future or something like that. But obviously Paul has, like you say, a very verbose and, like, you know, arguably quite a scientific response for it, which Alan isn't expecting and doesn't want to hear. Particularly, you know, the way he tees up the entrance of this character, he says, oh, it's the boy, chap, man from the local farm. I was actually wondering whether he might be one of the boys that Alan mentions in a previous episode when he talks about two big loyal boys that do menial work and don't question instructions. So I did wonder if it was going to be one of those, but I would argue that the character of Paul seems to be a bit too verbose. And also, I think we do get the two big loyal boys. They feature in, I think, the final episode.
Yeah, they're coming back.
Yeah.
There's a nice bit of colour at this point about Alan's past in relation to Fernando, when Carol was pregnant with Fernando, and also a programme that Alan ended up making as well. So Fernando made pregnant Carol so moody that Alan actually faked a radio job to be away during her first trimester, which is horrendous. And then because he was so bored, he had to make the programme anyway just to fill his days. So he created Devon, The Untold Story, which was never broadcast because it went up against which huge travelogue programme?
Yeah, it was Around the World in 80 Days, wasn't it?
Yeah, by Michael Palin, who, according to Alan, can't present travel programmes for shit.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue, Monty Python aside, presenting travel programmes is probably what Michael Palin's best known for now.
Yes. Question to the group. If you could make your own travel programme, what would it be? Where would you go? What would your theme be?
Oh, it would be Adam's Southern States Barbecue Tour. Actually, much like I think Alan suggested for one of his travel programmes, in a huge American Mustang, would love to do.
I think mine would be Nick's Northern American tour, which is a companion piece to Adam's, except instead of being in a big muscle car and eating lots of meats, I would be cycling and eating relatively healthy and chatting to the nice people that I met.
Perhaps we could meet up in a buffet somewhere central, like Iowa. Yeah.
Let's meet in the middle.
I would probably go for Tom Stab's tip to toe of Italy and work my way from the north of Italy down to the boot, to the toe of the boot of Italy, eating my way down from the north, where they are more sort of focused on butter and dairy, through to the south, where it's more focused on olive oil and lighter, fresher meals, and then hop on a little boat over to Sardinia, go to Sicily, just basically take in the whole of Italy and eat myself stupid.
I think the key thing about all of these ideas predominantly is combining travel with food, which think is absolutely the correct approach.
And also being raging egomaniacs that force our own names into the title of all the shows.
It is what we've essentially imagined the trip, except the trip has already been done and Coogan's already very much chomped at the buffet that is the trip.
This is Monkey Shush Tennis now. Does the trip in four different parts.
And for series two, I'm going to do the same thing, but from the north to the south of Japan, please.
You know, it's a good point, actually, that Devon, The Untold Story, it's quite a surprise that it isn't something like Alan Partridge's Untold Story of Devon or something like that instead.
Yeah, absolutely. He goes into a bit more travel chat here about trams and trams against cable cars. And it felt to me like it's sort of something, this kind of routine is something we've heard a lot before from Alan. This kind of one-upmanship. And I didn't really get a huge amount from the end of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before on the podcast, this is my kind of least favourite Alan when he goes into this kind of minute detail about kind of like having to prove a point or win an argument or whatever. It's just, I haven't got many notes on it, and it's just because I don't find it particularly interesting. He speaks quite quickly, he goes into detail. I don't really want to write all of that out, to be honest, but it's just not, it doesn't do very much to me. It also feels like they're trying to fill the time a little bit. And if we're saying that, we might be very, 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 very wrong about that, but I don't know.
Well, I think that the one purpose this does serve, though, it actually is a bit of a reminder of the kind of the quite nasty side that he can have with Lynn, with his interactions with Lynn. Like, he's being quite a rotten shit to her here, because he knows exactly what she means when she's saying, oh, aren't cable cars the same thing as trams? He's like, are they? Have you heard same thing, aren't they? Have you heard something else? And just like, there's quite a fun side to Alan and Lynn's interactions, but it's an interesting reminder that it isn't always like that. I think mostly throughout this series, his interactions with Lynn have been, even though you have that kind of boss-employee kind of relationship, they haven't been quite as cruel as this one, I think.
Yeah, generally it's softened, hasn't it? He also uses this whole tram cable car thing to slide in a bit of... well, he doesn't do it on purpose, but there's some subtle homophobia here where he says, you know, trams and cable cars are the same thing. Say that to a San Friscan man and he'd have a tizzy and slap you.
I didn't pick up on that. That's a good spot.
Yeah, slightly cheeky. Anything else for the Dreams episode?
Yeah, just one thing to recap, actually, that happened a little bit before in the episode, before we have Alan's fictional Devon radio show. He's talking about loving farm fresh eggs, and also that he loves them as long as they're not warm, and then says that's how they've been delivered through the ages, and then goes on to list pretty much all the historical figures he can think of. And I thought there are a few quite amusing bits to pull out of that list. So he includes the fictional Robin Hood. He says Richard III, Richard II, and the Richard before him. So can't think of the phrase Richard I. He says Adrian and the Wall, which I think he means something about Adrian's wall. And he also caps it off with, there are women in history too. So I thought that's whole section there was, because he kind of rattles through the list quite quickly. And I think actually there's quite a lot of detail to pull out, which is fun.
And that there are women in history too is very much the, and I also have a daughter of this section, isn't it?
Yeah. So I just like the way this episode wraps up. Alan's forgotten Seldom's eggs and he's going ballistic.
Yes.
Yeah.
An emergency stop to episode 14.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And so episode 15 is titled Hair. Did anyone have any assumptions or predictions about this episode going into it? I mean, firstly, I thought, I know hair is important to Alan, but to fill 20 minutes with hair, I mean, I basically was hoping this would go off on a tangent because I didn't really want to listen to
a grooming routine for 20 minutes is going to be insufferable.
Even in Alan's hands, I don't know that that can create 22 minutes of content.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I was that I predicted would happen in this episode was there would be some reference to the Alpha Papa hair again.
Yeah, which there is indeed.
Which there is.
Yeah. We start on a positive though. Alan is quite chipper. Why? Well, because he's decided to be cheerful. There's quite a lot of references to this sort of throughout the episode, but the idea that you can kind of just think yourself happy and that Alan's just decided to be happy and that kind of that's the way it works. It was kind of a nice start to the episode.
Yeah, he says yesterday was a blue Monday. Today is a new order.
Are we fans of New Order?
Yeah,
broadly. I mean, probably not as much as Steve Coogan, which is why I think the reference is in here, because it's all tied into sort of Manchester and obviously he was in 24-Hour Party People as well, so it kind of all ties together.
And I think it's 24-Hour Party People, I think, is well worthy of a mention. That's a great film, and it's a brilliant Coogan performance. So if anybody listening hasn't seen it, highly recommend. Yeah.
Blue Monday and Blue Monday 88 have combined streams of 226 million on Spotify.
Gosh.
A little fact nugget for you there.
So he kind of really romanticises about Manchester, although it culminates with kind of him describing how kids would hang out at service stations, which I don't know is really a thing, certainly not as part of the Manchester scene.
It's more about the rave culture, though, about travelling to and from illegal raves.
Yeah, so they would meet at service stations and then go to the raves because they'd get sent the address. They'd all congregate there and then they'd be sent the address of where to go for the rave. And it's normally somewhere near a bridge off the M1 or something like that. But,
so that would be genuinely annoying if you're a family that wants to stretch your legs or buy a magazine, but you can't because there's a load of bloody kids there.
What I like is that obviously I'm sure we're all going to talk about it, but it gets onto a list of uses for service stations that Alan considers, let's remember, more acceptable than just congregating in the car park as a New Order fan. These are things that he thinks are fine, but congregating, not fine.
Do you want to hit us with the list, Adam? I think there are four key
I've only got the last one, to be honest, the most important.
Okay, so you've got family stretching their legs, you've got a mum getting a magazine, a salesman getting a coffee, and...
just another lorry driver popping to the toilets for a wank.
That made me laugh so much the first time I listened to this episode. Really
so, question to the group.
Don't go there.
Have you ever driven a lorry?
Have you bought a magazine?
Have you been to a New Order concert?
Excellent. There's quite a big reveal at this point. So Alan, and good use of the term malting, but Alan has malted.
A clump has fell out about the size of a 50 pence piece.
I like his sort of, not here, but he repeats the word crummy quite a lot. You know, he likes to use that in the same way he's clinically fed up instead of actually depressed. You know, he feels crummy instead, or you know, down in the dumps instead of basically having anxiety and or depression.
Yeah. I love that he talks about hair as being something that we don't really think about, such as skin, teeth, or your perineum. Obviously, one of those things you probably don't think about very much, but skin and your perineum, I imagine, are on your mind quite a lot, and you really do want to take care of them.
I mean, obviously, the joke very much is Alan thinks about his hair all the time, doesn't he? We've had lengthy overviews on his hair care regime in this series alone.
He also says about the perineum, let's stick with that for a minute.
Oh, yeah, get back to that.
He says that it's a part of you never consider or see unless, and this is quoting Alan now, unless you squat over a compact mirror or a mirrored coffee table that can take your weight, which is so specific, you know that he's done it.
Yes.
I also like that you had to qualify that with, this is Alan speaking.
I would never buy a mirrored coffee table.
Yeah.
I think at some point on a previous episode of the podcast, at some point throughout our life as a podcast, someone has mentioned that they could see Alan with a comb over at some point because, you know, he can't, like, Alan's hair is so sort of crucial to him and ergo is part of, you know, crucial to the character. So the thought of him growing old and losing his hair is quite a...
Quite a
shocking image. Yeah, but well, exactly. Yeah, so yeah, I think someone said we could see him with a comb over at some point, so I wonder if that's something that will continue through Partridge, you know, when we see This Time come back, or any like televisual Alan, whether that is a factor.
It's quite an interesting thing, isn't it, because we've talked a lot about Alan being able to adapt over the years. He's not one of those comedy characters like a Bart Simpson that's frozen in time throughout. And so but hair has always been a constant, and I suppose for them to keep the conceit alive that Alan is, you know, existing in real time with the rest of us, he will have to lose it at some point. And I wonder maybe if there will be an era of Partridge that is very much more sort of Alan as a kind of Alan Moore type, Sorry, Alan as a Roger Moore type with a glass of whiskey, you know, maybe a flat cap, balding a little bit, sat by a roaring fire, kind of dispensing wisdom and children's stories. Maybe there's going to be that era of Partridge to come in the years down the line.
Well, I think the interesting thing about that, when you looking at it in real life, like Coogan actually, I think when he isn't filming, Coogan actually tends to grow his hair quite long. So his hair is actually still quite thick and luscious, I think, having seen him on some interviews recently. So, yeah, they'd have to actually sculpt some kind of hairpiece that's a comb over instead of relying on Coogan going bald himself, at the moment at least.
Yeah. One quick last bit on Alan's perineum. He mentions that he nicked it once trying to vault a barbed wire fence. Ooh. Which you can imagine. I mean, firstly, what a horrible image. But also, he is the sort of person that likes to, you know, jump fences, scale walls when he's in the countryside with mixed results, as we've seen on his documentaries before. And in other minor injuries that we need to commit to the yes. Alan timeline, yes. He lost his little toenail when a gay man skated over it. I mean, how he would know the man was gay, I don't think he does know that. I think he's assuming because a man is skating.
I think he's put rollerblades and gay people together, hasn't he? As if like, a bit like shopping, it's the preserve of gay people, when obviously that's completely untrue.
Yes, and as a result, he now cannot wear flip-flops, which is a real tragedy.
But he has to sock up on one of them.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And the weirdly inclusion of a weirdly specific detail also, that he gets jealous if he sees a man wearing flip-flops in an EasyJet queue.
I wonder how many times as well he flies EasyJet. That's what I was thinking. I would have thought he'd have been very much BA till he dies, but maybe not.
Is the conceit for the character, he probably thinks he should be flying BA club class, but he actually can't afford it as well? I don't know.
Moving on, I do like how Alan credits Alan Titchmarsh for coming up with the term big dick energy.
Yes, and also fanny vibes.
Yeah.
Before we dive fully into that, just a bit on the long hair, when Alan says he briefly grew it longer at the back and everyone would say, that's not Alan's hair, Alan doesn't have his hair like that. And I thought, what do you mean it's not my hair? I am me and that is my hair. Talk about something else stupid, like we teed up earlier in this episode. Of course, this is another perfect example of the writers using Alan as their mouthpiece to reply to criticism, specifically the Alpha Papa criticism of his hair. So in episode 5, AMA, this is referenced again. Why did you have a different hairstyle when Pat Farrell went mad with a gun at North Norfolk Digital in 2013? And I just quite like how specific this is, that I found a Radio Times interview from 2013 with, I think, Neil Gibbons, saying people have a real sense of ownership when it comes to Alan. He's someone they've taken to their hearts. So they have very strong feelings about what Alan would and wouldn't do. Some feel livid and betrayed that Alan has grown his hair longer at the back. So that's a specific quote from Neil Gibbons in 2013 there. So as much as I think it's very funny, them kind of addressing the criticism here, but I'm also starting to worry, are the Gibbons brothers and Coogan really not over this level of criticism as well?
I've got to say, when I watched Alpha Papa, in the level of detail we scrutinised it, I didn't even really notice that he'd grown his hair that much longer at the back.
So. I mean, it certainly didn't bother me.
No. Not as much as it's bothered Neil and Rob Gibbons.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the kind of visual imagery that's conjured up as well here when Alan's talking about his hair kind of falling out. And he just kind of says that he sort of picks it up and puts it back on onto his head and just says, please, please, please. the absolute desperation of the situation, that obviously it's such a big thing for him and he's obviously keen to get it back.
He's worried, isn't he, that having to do a comb over means that he's going to have to comb left, and traditionally he's decided he would comb right. In his words, if you comb right, you comb right. Anything else is like getting Chris Packham to eat meat again.
Yeah, I did love that.
And he says that they're switching combing from right to left is like Dylan going electric. It's that much of a big deal. Yeah.
So have you got the list of people who comb right and the people who comb left?
I can cover right. So you've got Des Lynam, Michael Parkinson, is it Jonathan Dimbleby or David? It's David Dimbleby, wasn't it?
David, yeah.
And Alan Jones, of course. And these guys are your big dick energy guys, yeah. According to Titchmarsh.
And now for fanny vibes, combing to the left, it's John Major. I mean, you'd think Alan would be a fan of John Major, right? Nikki Campbell, friend of the podcast, interviewed me. Sebastian Coe, a lord. Again, you would think Alan would be a fan. But Alan says these are people with a certain shiftiness.
Have there not been more references to Alan not liking Sebastian Coe across the APU? I feel like there might be.
I think
the only thing
have
I
been.
Can think of right now is the thing in the day-to-day when Chris Morris says, like off camera. I hate Sebastian Coe. Obviously, that's not Alan saying that, but I feel like there might be more, but I can't. I'm not sure.
I think we have covered a reference before, but Tom Stab's going to check the index in real time here. I also think all the people that Alan describes as fanny vibes are basically sort of kind of slightly left-leaning, all millionaires, I would assume, but all just kind of slightly left-leaning, a little bit more kind of centrist, whereas the other people are kind of like, not right-wing necessarily, but very traditional broadcasting and sort of members of society, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So he sees himself in that pack, and now what he's going to have to join the new set, which he's not necessarily entirely comfortable with.
I've got a Sebastian Coe update. I don't know if the Stab's got to this as well. He is mentioned in Homelessnessnessness.
He is indeed.
In I, Partridge. Alan writes, I dreamt up the perfect guest list for the new series. Sir Clive Sinclair, Lloyd Grossman, Charlie Dimmock, one of the Britpoppers, and Sebastian Coe. So it sounds like he's on board with him at that point.
Well, maybe when Sebastian Coe didn't become part of that lineup, he turned against him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
And he signs off that bit by saying, yes, these were ruddy good days.
Is it time for Alan's dispute at his rackets club? A phone call comes in.
Yes.
Another Paul is on the other end of the line, presumably not the one that delivers his butter and eggs.
I doubt it.
So Alan was accused of coming into the wrong entrance to the VIP car park, and he wants to identify the guy who accused him and his employer by day's end. And then Paul seems quite amenable, like he wants to help Alan out here. I suppose at a local rackets club, Alan potentially would be the biggest name involved, you know. But then Paul starts sort of kind of try and develop it into a more of a chat, and Alan just gets rid of him.
Well, like, I couldn't work out, does Paul hang up on him? Does the line get cut off? Because it's quite a weirdly abrupt ending. I couldn't quite work out what was going on at the end of the
call. My take on it is that all Alan wants is the name of the guy who accused him and his employer, so he can do damage. Paul tried to develop it into, you know, more of a conversation, and Alan's like, no, I've made my point, I've got what I wanted, goodbye.
Yeah, he's gone down the, I'm losing you, yeah, I can't hear you, just make sure you get the name by the end of the day, again, okay. And hang up.
Yeah, going through a tunnel, etc.
Exactly, yes.
And there's a nice little callback to Forward Solutions here, where he talks about the different pricing packages that you can opt for, from £20 for the basic book package to £999.99 plus VAT for the weekend retreat.
It was good to see that he did make use of an early bird offer as well, where you could save yourself £100.
I was actually quite surprised with this gag, because I think when Alan's talking about this is about him saying my choosing to be happier, that he doesn't want to pass off parts of Forward Solutions to the listeners. So I was assuming what would happen is, because he said I'm not going to do that, that actually would be what would happen. So I was quite surprised, instead of segments of Forward Solutions kind of repeated, it was actually just a pricing plan instead.
Although if you want a segment of Forward Solutions, you can go to Alan's LinkedIn, where he has put a short excerpt up there for people to enjoy.
And remember, satisfaction is guaranteed, or half of your money will be returned.
Up to half of your money back.
But we know that he thinks that's a good deal, because that's exactly what happened with the LA scam artist.
Mm. Yeah.
So he disagrees that depression is a chemical imbalance. Says today he simply chooses to be happy once again.
People that think that can F off.
Yes, although I think probably the thing that might have turned his mood around a bit is that he tweeted saying he was very sad about his hair, and people have been really, really lovely. Overwhelming. Well, very whelming.
At what point there's the line he's talking about his grandma, and he says, she used to stare me out. Imagine doing that to a kid. Absolutely love that line. And it kind of comes out of nowhere. I thought that was brilliant. The delivery is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah, because she's the one that used to say to him, what goes around comes around, and she wasn't a nice person.
Yeah.
So it's mentioned that losing hair is due to stress and anxiety.
Stress!
I do like Alan's reply to counter that he is not stressed or anxious, because he's got, and I quote, solid career, plenty of dough, Sonos throughout.
Brilliant.
enemies are dead or moved. And he's working on a novel set in the Victorian era called The Lamplighter.
About a deaf and dumb gaslighter.
Yep.
Called Chris.
Yeah.
And you missed out two key relationships there as well, Tom. He goes horse riding with the head of Norwich CID, and he's friends with the mayor.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is he?
And then one of the things that's perhaps a bit more bittersweet is that he is still promoting Corsadil, but he's only got a year left on that contract.
There's just something about the name Chris as well that in no way sounds like it's come from the Victorian era. I'm sure people were called Chris, but it just feels like the least Victorian name you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, it's Christopher at the closest, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
There's some updates from the Partridge Playhouse.
What could possibly have gone wrong here?
Yes, so the play's been cancelled. The auditionees were not good enough. And as Alan says, if you want to collaborate, go and do improv. If you want to act, be prepared to do as you're told.
And also, so it's the calibre of auditionees not up to scratch, but also there's been a rights dispute from the creator of whom Alan can't remember their name. So that's great as well. They haven't asked for permission to put this play on in the first place.
It's no permission.
ATGB.
Yes. Yeah, it's no rights from the permission holder, and the calibre of talent has been woeful. It's been cancelled.
I wonder as well, is it really that the issue with the calibre of talent is basically Alan hasn't had any stunners that he was hoping for?
It's probably that as well, isn't it?
Or there's just general issues with people being told by Alan
bad
how
attitudes.
To do it, and it being just generally terrible direction. Again, this is another thing that I would quite like to see actually play out. Alan as a director of a local play, that would be absolutely brilliant.
I mean, we know Alan's a great playwright because we've heard his play in Mid-Morning Matters, of course.
My God, you're busting.
That was Hannigan.
Hannigan, yeah. A chill wind or something it was called, I think.
Oh God, I can't.
Something about a glass blower. It sounds very much from the mind of someone that's writing about a gaslighter called Chris in the Victorian era who's deaf and dumb.
Yeah. He's been on a third date with a dog groomer, we find out, so that seems to be going all right. But he did try to remove a mole from her thinking it was food.
No, everybody does that.
Yeah, don't worry, everyone does that.
You would have thought he would have noticed
fine.
That already. If he's been on a third date with her, he would have noticed the mole already. Did he just think she permanently had food stuck to her face?
Alan's been tweeted by somebody suggesting he might be stressed because he's being trolled by that man. So Alan's counter to this is like, no, I'm not stressed. I mean, I'm sometimes skipping meals. He's not sleeping well and he's often feeling down for days at a time, but he's definitely not stressed.
But he does like to entertain... Sorry, go on.
Sorry, no, you go.
He does like to entertain the idea that he could go to the Svensson Hair Clinic, get hair treatment and charge it to high noon.
Yeah, he's genuinely buoyed by that, isn't he? Like, that kind of puts a real spring back in his step. He's like, oh yeah, I can do that. Great idea.
Rosa calls. She's found some of his hair, wants to put it in his bedroom. He can't understand why, but she thought he might want it to stuff cushions. And then there's a nice little bit here where he basically forgets that she's Filipino and he has to check that she wasn't going to curse him because I think he thought she would be sort of Romany origin, and he's kind of conflating that with holding onto his hair and cursing him.
I did try listening to the exchange he has with Rosa, and I couldn't really make out anything she's actually saying. I don't know if anybody else had any.
No, I couldn't really either.
It's quite kind of echoey and faint in the mix, but obviously Alan gives a bit of an overview of it anyway. But you're right, Adam. He says he asked Rosa if she's Hungarian or Romanian before she corrects him that she's obviously Filipino.
So Alan mentions that he's seen a film quite a long time ago about lesbian killer vampires when he was growing up. Nick, as a fan of horror films, I'm kind of looking to you as to, do you know what that film might be that he would have watched? I'm guessing the 70s?
I don't know what the film specifically is. The only thing I could think of is a lot of the Hammer horror was quite sexual in its overtone, and there were busty ladies in it. But I'm not familiar with the Hammer horror films specifically, so I'm not entirely sure what the film might be, but that was my best guess, that it could be something from the Hammer horror period. But if any listeners think they know what this film is, we'd certainly welcome any correspondence in terms of
so
what
you're
that film
just asking
be.
Listeners to send you a list of lesbian based vampire films.
DM me specifically.
Nick Alder, N-I-C-K.
Don't go to the main group. It's time to get into Toupet territory as we are regaled with a story at Pizza Express in Woking, which I thought found quite an interesting location given current events.
Does that give us a bit of an insight into when they were writing this? I think it does.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be some kind of serendipity moment is that the right word? I'm not sure, but like a moment where it kind of all comes together. The reveal that he was at Pizza Express in Woking at the same time as Prince Andrew, so he was able to kind of corroborate his story, his excuse. I thought there was going to be something like that, but I guess that maybe goes into slightly dodgy territory with like legals and things like that. But I thought there was going to be some kind of connection there, which I'm sad there wasn't, but I can maybe kind of understand that. There wasn't that included.
I guess the fun of it lies in Alan referencing that, and he's and oblivious to the significance of it.
I think the listener is encouraged to make up as ludicrous a scenario as you wish to in your own mind. That they've given you the tools to do so. Now go run riot with it.
The other thing is that Alan said that the reason that I kind of thought that was because Alan mentions that it was a children's birthday party. So, were we to believe that the child that came up to Alan was part of the party that Prince Andrew said that he was at? Because he said he was at a party, he was at a children's party Pizza Express in Woking. So I wonder if that's kind of, we've fed those breadcrumbs, but it's not obviously said that that was
potentially the kind of birthday party, children's birthday party that Prince Andrew might have been at, might have featured rich children precocious enough to go up to other diners and accuse them of having a wig.
I was kind of hoping that Alan, who you would imagine is quite, actually, you know, we've seen in Mid-Morning Matters series 2, big royalist, the joke would be that he wouldn't be able to recognise Prince Andrew if he saw him, but there's no actual suggestion that Prince Andrew is there, which is probably wise on the writer's part.
I do feel that I enjoyed the fact that Alan feels the need to respond to the child, whilst normally you probably wouldn't engage in such a conversation. Alan's like, oh, no, you can pull it if you don't believe me. It's definitely not a wig. He takes real kind of umbrage to the fact that this child would suggest he's wearing a wig.
Should we move on to 1984?
Yeah, and The Handmaid's Tale, which he describes as very one-sided.
Yeah, I really love that. It's a throwaway thing. He also does a quick, gotta do stand-up at this point as well.
I think that's the fourth, maybe even fifth time that is mentioned in the series. What I loved about his reference of 1984 is a very quick but good little gag. He says, 1984, the film or famous novel. So I love the fact he's obviously mentioning the film before the book. That's a nice doubling down on the character trait where he thinks he's an intellectual and well-read, but obviously he isn't, because if he was, he would be mentioning the book, not the film first.
Yeah, it's people that watch films and thinking that's almost like a box tick for I've read the book.
Yes,
or similarly, people that, like myself, that we use Audible to be like, yeah, I've read that book. You've listened to the audiobook. It's not quite the same. Someone's read it for you.
How long did it take you to finish The Stand?
It's 48 hours long and it took me 9 months. and it was the second time I read it the first time and got someone else to do the hard work the second time because I couldn't be bothered. So is it time to talk about Alan's big brother Liam, or is he called Dutch? I got a wee bit confused by this.
I got confused in my notes. I was like, hang on a minute, I've just written down that he's called Liam and now he's called Dutch. What's going on?
So to link the book to this, he says 1984, of course big brother's mean, that's what they do, flick your hair, etc.
I do like what Alan says when Liam kind of makes himself known and appears. He says that the bullies would absolutely bob their loads. Does that mean shit themselves? Surely
I am assuming so.
Yeah.
I mean, even Alan doesn't know what it is because he kind of says, oh, in this dream, thoughts. So even Alan doesn't really know what this is. And I think as a listener, we're equally perplexed about. I think it's like his brother is... His imaginary brother is called Liam, but then there's a kind of like subsequent thought about this being almost a dream within a dream. It all gets very Inception, where suddenly
Inception.
Liam becomes the character of Dutch.
Chewing on a matchstick or something like that as well.
I thought he sounded a bit like Dwayne Benzie from Space.
Yes.
I also do like the bit where he's just pointing out the bullies, him, and then goes, do him last.
quite sinister. I enjoyed that.
Very sinister.
And not dissimilar to Michael the Geordie's imagined helicopter attack in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2 as well.
Crashing to the sea in a big ball of flames.
Exactly.
Hello, you bastard.
He's just a mitt.
I also noted, so at the end of this kind of fantasy sequence of this imagined Big Brother beating up Alan's bullies, that he would grab them by the hood of their parka and swing them into a hedge. Did anybody recognise that from a previous episode?
No.
So very, very similar. When Alan talks about Kylie Minogue in the break-in episode, Alan says that he would just grab the hood of her parka and swing her into a pond. Love that.
Nice.
A beautiful image.
And I wonder, is the implication there as well that a young Alan being bullied was grabbed by the hood of his parka and swung into something?
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. He breaks the podcast for a special announcement, which seems a bit weird because we're almost finished. But it's basically just to alert people about a new speed camera that's been installed. So Alan temporarily forgetting the supposed reach of this podcast and basically just giving local news, as he has done before, to be fair.
I like that, though. That's great. I think in the APU, of course, Alan's not going to really understand the fact that there's potential global reach of a podcast. He's just thinking about what do people in Norfolk need to know about.
And I think if that's bad, then it only gets worse when he then introduces the letter of the week this week, bearing in mind we've never had a letter of the week before, so this has just been introduced now.
A new regular feature.
Yeah.
We're nearly 10 episodes away from the an episode that was purely about letters as well.
Yes, true, very true. Crucially, had to introduce this feature because the letter is presumably so pressing. It's somebody asking where they can buy a big tin of Swarfiga, and nobody can really help.
Well, he also goes on in some length about his dead father, which Alan does not elaborate on.
Yeah, I always think that the reality is it's a letter about his dead father, and at the end he signs off about, oh, do you know where he can get some Swarfiga? But Alan's kind of like flipped that to be like, he wants to know where he can get some Swarfiga. Like, that's the important bit. There's something about a dead father, but he wants to know where he can get some Swarfiga. And, good news, there's 6 replies. Very much with a common theme throughout, where essentially the answers are no, you can't buy it in large tins anymore.
I think the responses go no, 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 but you can still get the plastic tubs, and no, sorry.
And that brings us to the end of the episode about hair, which ended up being about a lot more than hair, and I actually quite enjoyed the sprawling tangents that it went on. I was a bit worried it was going to be just about hair. I should have learned by now, I suppose, because most of these episodes, you know, they've got a title and then they spend about 6 minutes on that thing and then they just wander off into the distance.
Yeah, and I guess that's exactly what you'd expect. That's very much the point of the joke, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep. So we'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode, about from the Oast House, or about Partridge in general. You can get in touch on Instagram at @MonkeyTennisPod, Twitter at @ThePartridgePod, Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod, ThePartridgePod@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voice note for our WhatsApp. It may end up on a future episode. That's 07923 600 017. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please do show your appreciation with a good review on your podcast provider, or by dropping us a coffee, the price of a cup of coffee, at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. We'll be back next week, where we're coming direct from a spa and rescuing a magpie. But until then, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Kukumpa.
Monkey Tennis.
Bring, bring.
Fireworks. Don't muck about.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey Tennis.
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey Tennis.
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey Tennis.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, 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 absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey Tennis.
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn. Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.
Nah.
Monkey Tennis.
From the Oast House.
Keep it down, love.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.